The headlines this hour. No end in sight to the Saudi blockade of Yemen as Riyadh seizes yet another emergency fuel ship bound for the war-torn country. U.S. President Joe Biden accuses Russia of weighing the use of biological and chemical weapons in its military operation in Ukraine. And Russia halts peace treaty talks with Japan, citing Tokyo's unfriendly positions over the conflict in Ukraine. This is news. Thanks for joining us. Saudi Arabia impounds yet another emergency fuel ship bound for Yemen amid a deteriorating humanitarian crisis there. The Yemen Petroleum Company says the ship en route to the port city of Hodeidah was seized on Monday. The vessel was detained despite being searched and holding entry permits from the UN. Two other ships were seized earlier the same day. The Saudi-led coalition has held dozens of ships over the past 1.5 years, blocking Yemen's much-needed fuel imports. The humanitarian situation is deteriorating due to an all-out Saudi blockade. Much of Yemen's vital sectors, including hospitals, as well as electricity and water services, have already come to a halt. According to the UN, more than 23 million people now need assistance. That accounts for about 3 out of every 4 people. Among them are 19 million who will go hungry in the coming months. It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. U.S. President Joe Biden once again accusing Russia of considering the use of chemical weapons in Ukraine. Biden says that President Vladimir Putin's back is against the wall. According to the U.S. president, Russia is now setting up false flags in preparation for using chemical weapons. Biden says these include Moscow's allegation that Kyiv has biological and chemical weapons, but has not offered any proof to back his claims. Moscow says that it has evidence of Washington helping Ukraine make chemical weapons in bio-warfare labs near the Russian border. But the U.S. denies that. Tim Anderson, director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies, joins us from Sydney. We also have Brian Berletich, a political analyst and commentator, who joins us from Bangkok. Okay, I'd like to welcome you both. Tim Anderson, let me first start with you. We've been hearing about this warfare labs that have been reportedly funded by the Pentagon. Now, the U.S. comes out and rejects that, but yet you have the statements that were made by Victoria Nuland. What is the story behind this?
Well, yes, the White House and the Associated Media at first claimed this was fake news coming from Russia, and then, as you said, Victoria Nuland, who had a very powerful role in the coup in 2014, admitted that there were more than 24 labs in the U.S. We now know some detail of those labs and also who was the private companies contracted involved. And the U.S. revised position has been, oh, well, these were conducting research. They weren't offensive military labs. But as anyone knows, if you look at these things, the safety protocols on biological chemical weapons are closely linked to the production. So in other words, the two are often associated in terms of their research. So certainly, and I think Victoria Nuland also expressed concern that the Russians were going to gain control of those labs. So we know that the U.S. had supported the biological research and possible military uses of biological weapons in Ukraine. And we know also that the current president, Zelensky, had wanted to get his hands on nuclear weapons and had regretted the Ukraine giving up its nuclear weapons. So what we're seeing now is the foreshadowing of a false flag, such as the U.S. has used before in Iraq and Syria. Let's remember these ideas that their opponents were about to attack them with overwhelming weapons, and therefore there had to be a preemptive strike. So it's a familiar pattern in U.S. foreign policy.
Brian Berletich, the U.S. does have a history of using chemical weapons that are banned. We can talk about what has happened in Fallujah. We could obviously talk about what has happened in Vietnam, and also the fact that they have a rap sheet in terms of having these laboratories across the world. But it's coming off as if it has nothing to do with this type of operation. So it doesn't have a solid footing when it comes to complete denial of it. in this case, Ukraine.
Absolutely. And we have to remember that the United States, as your other guest has said, they have a pattern of always falling back and accusing others of using weapons of, you know, mass destruction, including biological and chemical weapons. And then it turns out that it is a lie. They've done this over and over again. And we have to remember that in Syria, the use of chemical weapons was carried out by terrorists that were proxies for the United States. And these were relatively unsophisticated groups compared to what is in Ukraine. These labs could easily have dual uses and be used for this purpose. And we're always told that it was the Syrian government who did that in Syria when these so-called chemical attacks were happening on the eve of victory in a certain city or location in Syria by the Syrian government, who would benefit in no way possible by carrying out any sort of chemical attack. And they would be very symbolic attacks with two or three canisters, which would have no effect at all on the battlefield, but would have significant political consequences. And this is what the U.S. has been doing in Syria. And then we have to very much be on the lookout for this sort of pattern of behavior in Ukraine.
Okay, let's take a look at some social media posts on this, and we will get back to our discussion. Our first post, like Saddam, had WMDs or Bashar al-Assad use chemical weapons, the U.S. is just preparing for a military intervention in Ukraine. On to our next post, U.S. President Biden is claiming that Russia is about to launch chemical weapons on Ukraine. Remember when the U.S. president told the world Iraq had weapons of mass destruction? Be careful on what Biden and his clowns tell you. Next, for those who don't believe Biden's warning about chemical weapons, remember many had doubts when he warned that Russia would invade Ukraine. USA will use biological and chemical weapons in Ukraine. They will tell the world that it was a Russian attack. And our final post. Would Biden like to share the clear evidence that Putin was considering using biological weapons on Ukraine? Not like America has a history of false flags on chemical weapons. All right, some of the social media posts there. Russia is steadfast, Tim Anderson, on bringing this issue up on a number of occasions. What is Russia's plan? I mean, by bringing the issue of these biolabs repeatedly, what's the conclusion or your analysis behind it being presented so many times with this, and then, of course, whether a false flag is going to occur or not?
Well, on the one hand, rationale for the Russian invasion or operation in Ukraine has been precisely or similar in character to the U.S. rationale for invading Iraq, with one difference, that there was more substance in the Russian accusation of an immediate threat to itself, partly through the threat of biological weapons, the threat of Ukraine reacquiring nuclear weapons, the expansion of NATO, and also the constant attacks, 8 years of attacks on those eastern parts of Ukraine that were closely allied with Russia. And there was a big buildup of Ukrainian troops also in the east of Ukraine, threatening that they were going to go in and crush the rebel breakaway republic. So there was far more of an imminent threat to Russia than there was a threat to the US. But let's remember also with the US position here, they are one of the few states that has not complied with their requirements under the Chemical Weapons Convention. And Russia has recently challenged the U.S. to agree to a biological weapons convention, which doesn't exist as yet. So there's some things that Russia is trying to throw out into the arena in terms of, I suppose, the propaganda of this conflict, really, because on the other hand, looking at the debate, it's not very clear at all, unlike Libya, unlike Syria, that NATO has any interest at all in trying to impose a no-fly zone over Ukraine. Some of its Ukraine allies may want it, But the US and NATO know very well this will mean a direct conflict with the Russian Air Force, which is not yet fully operational over Ukraine, and they've stepped away from that. So it's really, I think, more for the way in which this this conflict is being spun. I don't think that Biden has a stomach for intervening against Russia on any of these pretexts in a way that they did in Libya, for example.
Very well. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it. Brian Brilatesh, political analyst and commentator from Bangkok. Tim Anderson, thank you for your input. Director of the Center for Counter-Hegemonic Studies from Sydney. And with that, we come to an end for this edition of the News Review. Ukraine says its efforts to evacuate civilians from besieged towns and cities are focused on Mariupol as Russia keeps pounding the city. Deputy Prime Minister Irina Vereshchuk made the announcement but did not say whether any new agreement has been reached with Russia to allow safe passage for trapped residents. On Monday, authorities in Ukraine said that Kyiv and Moscow had agreed to create 8 humanitarian corridors to evacuate civilians. That agreement did not include Mariupol. The city has become a focal point of Russia's attacks. The Russian military has also intensified attacks on other cities, including Kharkiv. The UN says that nearly 3.5 million people have fled Ukraine since the offensive began in late November. Russia says it has broken off peace treaty talks with Japan because of Tokyo's unfriendly position against Moscow over Ukraine. Russia says that it does not intend to continue the negotiations under the current conditions. The move has drawn a reaction from Japan, with Prime Minister Fumio Kishida calling it completely unacceptable. Japan has recently imposed a series of sanctions on Russian financial institutions and exports. Two countries have not signed a peace treaty since World War II due to a territorial standoff over a set of islands. Russia also says it has withdrawn from talks over joint business projects on the islands and has ended visa-free travel to the territory for Japanese citizens. The EU takes a major step forward in establishing its own army against the backdrop of the conflict in Ukraine. EU foreign and defense ministers have adopted the so-called strategic compass, which will involve a huge increase in military spending. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
At present, the 27 nations in the European Union spend 1.5% of their economic output on weapons and troops. That is about to increase significantly because EU ministers meeting in Brussels have just adopted their strategic compass following 2 years of negotiations.
Today, the military expenditure in Europe of all member states adding up, it's about 200,000 million euros. We have to spend more.
In his press conference, Borrell highlighted that combined EU nations already spend 4 times more than Russia on military capabilities. But that is still not enough, he said. He insists the bloc's military plan will not undermine NATO. Many analysts say there's no doubt that it will. But that's not a bad thing, as NATO is driven by an aggressive US foreign policy, they suggest. Foreign and defence ministers are in the process of creating an EU army. They say the conflict in Ukraine proves the importance of such a move. When opinion polls are carried out, most citizens always agree they don't want more money being spent on war machines.
The more we put and focus energy on something wrong like war, you know, it increases the chance that war is coming to us.
There is also resistance to the huge amounts of money being spent by the 30 countries that make up the NATO military alliance.
My party and my political friends, we want that Germany goes out of NATO. We want to bring Russia into Europe because Russia is a part of Europe and the United States are far from Europe.
NATO and EU leaders will hold summits later this week here in the Belgian capital. Peace activists are calling for greater diplomatic efforts by them to end the bloodshed in Ukraine. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
France's anti-government protests are becoming a regular occurrence less than 3 weeks before their presidential election begins. French households are being slammed by inflation, spelling difficulties for incumbent politicians. Ramin Mazari has more from Paris.
Since late last week, France has seen nationwide anti-government protests almost every day. March 17th's protests were over better pay and working conditions. March 19th saw the yellow vests and protests against state-sponsored Islamophobia and racism. While March 21st saw the record price of gasoline cause taxi drivers, truckers, fishermen, and others to protest nationwide. President Emmanuel Macron has joined the European Union's unprecedented sanction drive against top energy supplier Russia for its military operation in Ukraine, regardless of the economic costs on the average French household. The price of petrol has crossed the psychological barrier of 2 euros per liter, creating inflation in goods across the board. Those on low and fixed incomes are now being told to make sacrifices by politicians who may be living far more comfortable lifestyles.
Moi, je pense qu'ils souffrent vraiment.
I think that people are really suffering. Unfortunately, this doesn't mean much to our leaders. There are elderly people who live off canned sardines, if not canned cat food. French politics is 30 years behind where it should be. And if it doesn't change, there might be a civil war here.
Adding to the hardships being asked of the average French voter, Macron recently announced that if reelected, he will raise the retirement age to 65. That has caused the left-wing candidate, Jean-Luc Mélenchon, to jump in the first-round polls to third place, but he still trails the far-right's Marine Le Pen by several points. While inflation has soared, it's not like this is a new problem for the average French person. Despite long-time official claims of low inflation, reduced purchasing power has been the number one issue for voters in 2017 and 2012 as well. There will be at least two more days of nationwide protests this week. France's first-round presidential vote is now less than 3 weeks away. Many are saying that the final days of Macron's five-year term are ending in a typical fashion, full of anti-government protests. Ramin Mazahari, Paris.
That does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
With the spring, the season of renewal and freshness, and the greening of nature, we here at IRIB English Radio wish you happiness, prosperity, and good health.
He who asks questions cannot avoid the answers. A simple question.
There's a massive problem of homelessness in the UK, and it seems to be getting worse during the COVID-19 pandemic. There's also an ethnic bias in the statistics, with black households more likely to suffer the issues of homelessness than the white population. How can this be happening in a country with considerable wealth and one of the six largest economies in the world? One striking contrast is the difference in the life of the Prime Minister Boris Johnson, who has all the advantages of personal wealth and an apartment in Downing Street, while every night many sleep rough within sight of the street where he lives, but a million miles from how he lives. It's a situation that has been brought to prominence by the current pandemic, as key issues associated with homelessness have been left unresolved, while the government struggles with a host of problems in relation to the rapid spread of the disease through the general population. COVID's impact has left a mark on the most vulnerable in terms of housing and homelessness. In most difficulty, those in emergency accommodation plus the large community of rough sleepers carry on trying to cope in temporary accommodation or in the streets of London and beyond. They represent a large group of residents of a country hit by an accommodation epidemic, as the government seems unable to fix one of the biggest and most pressing problems facing hundreds of thousands of men, women, and children in Britain.
How does the public feel about a prime minister living in luxury while many face accommodation problems or sleep rough not far from his Whitehall residence? And what do thousands living in the streets of Britain's capital city tell us about the state of the nation and its future prospects? Simple questions with important answers. And let's start with this. How do those in the capital feel about the homeless situation in the UK? That's what we asked people here in East London. This is what they told us.
It's very, very tough. Either they put the rent very high, the private landlord, they got the rent is higher. Number two, the homeless, too many. In Tower Hamlet, too many drugs, too many things going on, too many. Even the mayor of Tower Hamlet, he don't care. We have complained to our councillors and the members. They don't bother anything. They don't care about these things.
Of course, no one likes to stay in the outside of homes in the streets, but the conditions and the life is pushed towards people to that way.
I don't know. This is just an opinion. I think it's probably on the rise. I think there's a lot of issues that need to be addressed. Yeah.
You don't have the place to sleep in. You're sleeping outside. So it's very terrible.
Well, I'm not very happy about it. I think they should have more help rather than seeing them sleeping in the street in a big city like London. I don't think it should happen. That's my thing about it, really.
Honestly, I feel like it's a bit dumb that people ain't helping the homeless to get better shelter, if you get what I mean.
I think it seems like a big problem. I mean, when you're walking the streets of London, you can see that there are a lot of people who are sleeping outdoors and they're looking for a place to stay, and particularly over Christmas when the winter months are really, really cold.
I think the homeless crisis that we have in the UK is just rising. So if you look at Australia, India, even America, it's just rising. And we've got to make a difference in the UK ourselves.
They have to sleep outside, and it's not good for us and for the community, for the state.
You know, everywhere I go, majority of the time, I see people, you know, and obviously it's terrible, especially this time of year, you know what I mean? Everyone's cold and people are looking for shelter and stuff like that.
Well, I've got a friend that's homeless, and I met a couple people. Well, they told me their story, how people treat them, whereas they're not treated right. There's a lot of prejudice going on. You know, it's sad, to be honest. Like, I've even helped homeless people create a home, like build.
So yeah, it's not great, and especially with COVID going on, it's getting worse for them as well. But I don't know, I'm not sure exactly what the solution is.
Oh, it's devastating. It's very prevalent.
I think it's really appalling, really. I think it's that, you know, 2021, we've got this going on, and I think we should do something about it.
The Prince Philip should, and the Prime Minister should, build good housing for them, like mars, give them a special tree, because they're homeless. Instead of normal houses, they build for people made of sand and stones.
How do you feel about the fact there's so much homelessness in Britain? Because there is a lot, 200,000 people, in fact.
Yeah, it's a really big figure, and it's really alarming for the UK citizens, yeah, definitely.
Especially in UK, it's quite disappointing to see people are still rough sleeping, and especially in this poor weather and during pandemic, it's difficult.
Just for people, it's too expensive. The, you know, the rent prices and stuff.
There's so many of them. I've lived in Britain since 1989. I have never seen that many homeless people ever in my life before.
What do you think about the fact there's so much homelessness in Britain now?
Well, because I think the inequality is, increasing. So social system is breaking down, and that's why the homelessness is there.
As Boris Johnson lives comfortably in his Downing Street apartment, others live rough in the streets of the capital. How does the public feel about that?
He's the Prime Minister of UK, so he has to live in a security place. He can't live just like us ordinary people.
If Prime Minister lives in a warm place, he must ensure that people which he rules, they should stay in the warm houses, at least in Christmas, I think.
Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister, I think he doesn't give a toss about what's happening on the streets, to be honest.
So I don't think it's fair for him to have a certain rule for himself and the rest. We have the rules of seeing people sleeping outside, you know? I mean, I'm not a rich man, but if I had more space, I'll invite somebody in my house to for the night.
Honestly, I don't think he really cares about homeless people. Like, he only cares for himself, if he's, you know what I'm saying. Like, apparently he's been partying along like, around the coronavirus time, so I don't think he's a great prime minister for us to actually do it.
I think he's looking at the national security, he's got other issues on his mind. Now, I think with the homeless is that just like we do a petition for everything, why don't we do a petition for the homeless?
He don't bother anybody. He's a joker. A real joker. Real comedian. Yeah, our minister is a real comedian.
To be honest, I don't think Boris has done enough for a lot of things. I think in his mind, the homeless crisis is probably bottom of his list.
No, he hasn't, but at the same time, he's got way more on his plate as well. Yes, it's always been an issue, and homelessness is something that's an issue everywhere in the world, not just in London and England.
I don't feel as though he's addressed the issue in an adequate way whatsoever. Sadly, though, I feel as his policies are part of a larger conservative agenda to minimise spending and focus on finance in London, which is a shame. But I don't feel like he's kind of a puppet of the Conservative Party, so it's not essentially his problem. It's more of an issue with the changing dynamic of politics within Britain.
Oh, we need to change all of our behaviour, thinking and attitudes as well. It's not for only Boris Johnson, it's also the people thinking. We need to change this one.
This is really disgusting that some people are too wealthy and other people have nothing to sleep.
Boris Johnson is Boris Johnson, isn't it? He can afford it. That's his job.
I don't know how the people like him or me can sleep in peace while the other people are sleeping rough.
It's hard for me to say, really. I think in terms of the amount of money that's going towards the scheme and in terms of helping other homeless people, it's more money definitely could go into places that need it most, you know, to deprived areas, which can be across all of England.
Why has homelessness gone up so much in the UK? And has COVID had an impact?
I think last 2 years, maybe a pandemic has affected this because, you know, most of the people became unemployed. But I think the main reason here is there is a strict, you know, common rules in here, and community don't want to accept someone who not belongs to their, you know, who not familiar with them.
Well, I think there's different reasons. First of all, like, there's a lot of poverty. There's a lot of the Brexit has had a massive impact on like people applying for benefits and so on. And then also I think the refugees is another one, and
maybe people are not giving it more thought, you know. And I'm not saying to demonstrate about it, but just to make your opinions known and your feeling, you know, positive action and non-violence. That's it.
The lockdown, which has now taken away people's jobs, so they can't actually get a job, or something else that has happened in their family.
Because there are more people who are struggling to find a job, they're struggling to earn money, and that there's not enough places for them to live.
I think that's because of the government spending is going towards war and so on.
Especially during COVID and stuff like that, I imagine loads of these places, you know, shut down, like the hostels and certain places where homeless people would have, you know, like an outlet almost, somewhere to go and somewhere to stay. And obviously, during COVID, it's that messed up a lot of things, I'd imagine.
Less jobs, you know, economy maybe. Well, partially it's due to the pandemic, obviously, with people losing their jobs and whatnot. Rising inflation, all of these things take a part into it as well.
I feel as though freer liberal markets in Britain, and us having like I say, the paradigm of neoliberalism is squeezing the amount of spending that governments can focus on it. Things like economic crises become broader issues which are taken more of a priority.
I think housing probably, a lot to do with housing. There's a lot of people coming into the country as well, which is also probably contributing to not enough beds, not enough spaces. You know,
there are not accurate policies in place to make sure that everyone is taken care of appropriately.
Well, myself, I'm self-employed, and I felt a big difference. Yeah, to be honest, you know, before COVID and now, it's much difficult to get clients and, you know, make more money.
As long as I know, COVID, during the COVID lockdown and things, you know, they did increase that, you know, that accommodation, so people were, I mean, you know, given the accommodation, but definitely financially, mentally and physically, people are suffering a lot, actually, yes.
Here's the size of the problem. 11,580 single households were assessed as sleeping rough when asked. That's an increase of 39.4% compared to 2019-20. Families involving black ethnicity are disproportionately homeless. They account for 9.7% of those officially seen as needing support, but they only make up 3.5% of the population. Overall, in 2019-20, over 258,000 received homelessness assistance, a huge number for one of the world's most wealthy countries.
How do people here in the city feel about the fact that a first world country such as Britain still has so many individuals living in a housing crisis or even sleeping rough?
All of them, most of them is drugs, alcoholics, and this for this reason they don't want to get into flat, because if the government give them a flat, they can't pay the rent. They can't pay the rent, they can't keep the flat maintained. So how can the government will help them out?
I was thinking that Britain is like the one of the most wealthy countries in the world. But when I came here, I saw a lot of people in the cities. They were living in streets and literally they were eating from the no garbage.
I think we're very selfish. I you know, we don't really care about people next door. I think we're losing the sense of community, and until we go back to this community, I don't know, minded people, that we're not going to sort homelessness or any other issue, poverty or whatever, drugs or whatever.
I'm just surprised it's happening. You know, yes. The money is here. They could do it if they want to do it. This is how I feel about it.
We've been supported by three different countries, and we still can't provide for people to actually become stable. And I feel like that's upon our Prime Minister and other associates.
There's always a solution if you want to find it, I would say. If people say there's not a magic money tree, but I guess if you really wanted to find the money, then you probably could somewhere. It's just where that money's going and where the government wants to prioritise.
Well, like Indira Gandhi said once, do you know what she said? I'll move from Bombay all the poor, so there will be no poor in India, Bombay. And Mr. Boris Johnson will do the same. Move all the poor from London and it will be rich London.
People aren't, I feel like we're not doing enough. I feel like we're focused on the wrong things, you know what I mean? On the news every morning it's this and that. You know, there's always another problem, and majority of the time it's about COVID or... But yeah, I just feel like there's so many problems at the moment that...
In life you usually just focus on yourself. But, you know, it's also nice to think about other people. But you see, the people up there, the Prime Minister and stuff, they only think about themselves.
When you're dealing with things like homelessness,
just giving them money isn't going to fix the issue. They need to learn what to do with the money, how to make the money stretch for them forever, you know, what to do with investing, pensions, getting jobs, things like that.
Governments are disassociated from people in Britain, and the other issues have become a higher priority, such as sort of economic sustainability and international competitiveness of Britain, rather than there's just no sort of community spirit voting for Labour movements and left-wing movements. There's no collective action anymore.
It is really frustrating. It is really frustrating, and it is really the hamper of the British peoples.
I do know that, you know, society is complaining, people's complaining.
When I'm walking and if I see it, I feel so bad. I mean, you know, I'm lucky enough to have, a shelter on my, head. But when you see the, you know, it's the first world country, developed country, there's no shortage of money. But sadly, those people are sleeping rough, not looked after.
What is the future for the United Kingdom when the streets of its capital have become home for over 10,000 people?
We know this, like, rich people are getting richer, poor people are getting poorer, which obviously is going to lead to more people being homeless. And the housing in London especially, it's ridiculous, it's so expensive. How many people can actually afford, you know, to buy a house, to rent a decent place that they can go home? Not many people.
Well, I don't see where we're going. Hopefully I'll be standing and be able to demonstrate about it with no violence. You know, I'll talk about it. That's all you need to do, you know. Just show the government that this should not happen. You know, people should not sleep outside, especially in this cold weather.
One thing is, I'm also now not blaming all the only nation, because some people can work and they should work, and those who cannot, they should get help.
To be honest, I think it'll only get worse. I don't think, you know, hopefully, because like you say, we do have the resources to help these people, you know what I mean? And, you know, they're all, especially at the moment, like you said, I don't know what the number was, but 10,000, you know, people going to sleep, especially, like I said, during winter, it's freezing.
Well, it's either going to increase or it's going to go lower until the Prime Minister does something. And he's not doing much right now.
Although homelessness has gotten worse over the first few years, look back 30, 40 years, maybe even more, it has gotten much better since then. Unemployment has gone down loads and loads. So it is getting better. Like I said, because of how complex it is, it's going to take many, many years.
The future is just to get worse, currently. If it continues down this road, then there will be no momentum or motivation to change anything unless something fundamental changes within the parliamentarian system.
Well, I think there's a lot more than 10,000, to be honest with you. I don't think there is 10,000. I mean, you've only got to go up and down London and you see them on the trains, you see them on the roads.
Unless we have a change in the government, I cannot see anything positive. I think there is a need for a government who would be sympathetic, who would understand the actual issues. If you are living in a mansion, I am not too sure how would you understand the difficulties and issues people facing on the street.
I think it's going to be even more, to be honest. If nothing's going to change, it's going to get worse. Yeah, because the young generation is growing as well. They're struggling to get jobs. They're struggling to get a property or to afford to rent. It's going to get worse, yeah.
Well, it's not sending a good image, if you ask me, but I think the whole world is the same, really. It's not just Britain. But I think it's going to get better. Let's just hope it gets better.
I think I had my time. Perhaps the next generation is going to be getting even tougher time. So, in one hand, government is borrowing billions and hundreds of billions of pounds. Nobody knows where it's going. But the next generation has to pay. And perhaps, sadly, the homeless people will be the last one to be in the queue to get the help.
Mr. John Sparks, the chief executive of homeless charity Crisis, has said, "You cannot free people from the cycle of homelessness without a proper home and, crucially, the support they need to keep it long-term." Amnesty International adds that frontline services warn they are at breaking point due to a rise in homelessness, and that the UK could be facing a human rights catastrophe. At the same time, when it comes to housing difficulties, black households are particularly at risk.
As the UK experiences yet another rise in COVID-19, and as Boris Johnson appears focused on his own survival, his government struggles to solve the homelessness issue. The Prime Minister could himself be evicted from Downing Street. Yet his problems are small compared to being homeless or sleeping rough day after day. But the government's COVID crisis has made it even less able to help one of the most vulnerable groups in the country, people with nowhere to live.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
وقضى ربك ألا تعبدوا إلا إياه وبالوالدين إحسانا.
Your Lord has decreed that you shall not worship anyone except Him, and He has enjoined kindness to parents.
For humanity.
Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم Brothers and sisters, dear listeners السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome to IRIB English Radio and you are listening to the program for humanity. We are looking at human rights found in the letter of the commander of the faithful Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi as-salam that was written to his commander Malik al-Ashtar when he sent him as a governor to Egypt. Now, we're not trying to explain this letter that was done in a different program. Rather, we want to see the human rights lesson in this letter of Amir al-Mu'mineen. So, we said many times, over and over, that the core of human rights and the establishment of human rights, the maintenance of human rights, in fact, depends on justice. So Amir al-Mu'mineen says to Malik, maintain justice in administration and impose it on your own self. And when people who are underprivileged see that such system is not maintained and justice is not maintained, it will create a division within people. So as a governor, when you need to establish justice, it needs to be imposed because it should not be left to choice. It should not be put in the hands of the elite. Rather, it should be imposed on all. There is no one that should see themselves above the law or exercise the law depending on how they feel like it. That should not exist. Because sometimes when we look at systems, and especially when, and specifically when we look at people in power, they favor the family members, they favor people around them, they favor people that they know, their friends, they give them power and position, and they deprive the rest of it. And that's a common practice across the board. It has been done before and has been done now. So therefore, justice is not maintained anymore. Justice is not preserved anymore. Justice is lost. So Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi says, applying justice is one thing. Bringing justice to people is one thing. Maintaining it is another thing. Because to say and to think that you are applying justice and you are a just person is one thing. If you don't maintain it, it will get corroded. It will get decomposed. It will be destroyed. It will be gone. It will be eliminated. Whatever words you want to use, you can use. But the fact is, all these systems, they need to be maintained. Freedom, for example, needs to be maintained. Healthcare needs to be maintained. Justice needs to be maintained. And so on and so forth. Every system that we have, that we apply to the people, we need to make sure it's maintained. Otherwise, everything will be lost. And if justice goes away, if justice becomes old and unattended to, and it's not applied no longer, it's just a title and just a name, then you'll have many people in the streets. You'll have many homeless people. You have many jobless people. As you can see in a lot of countries, Western countries who, you know, have take pride in being civilized, and they talk about justice themselves. But justice is not maintained in their systems. Therefore, you see people suffering. Let us take a short break and then we continue.
Dear listeners, you are listening to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. You can send us your emails, comments, and questions at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program For Humanity coming to you from IRIB English Radio. Again, Amir al-Mu'mineen says to Malik in terms of human rights, remember, the privileged few will not rally around you in moments of difficulties. They will try to sidetrack justice. They will ask for more than what they deserve and will show no gratitude for favors done to them. They will feel receptive in the face of trials and will offer no regret for their shortcomings. Now, obviously, that's an important fact that governments and people in authority needs to keep in mind when it comes to applying and maintaining justice within a system and to the people, where sometimes we have the privileged few, because either they are wealthy or either because they own lands and companies or because they are in power. Such people are devastating. Such people are destructive to communities and to societies and to countries, because these people only care about themselves. So Amir al-Mu'mineen says, in moments of difficulties, when the country is suffering, when people are suffering, these people will not come to help. When was the last time you've heard of a rich person who has billions and billions of dollars? When a country goes into poverty, they come to their help. Now, I was reading recently that Elon Musk, 3% of his income can end world poverty. Just one person, a third of his income, can end world poverty. Could you imagine what the rest could do? So we have the capacity, but those, the privileged few, they will not come to the help of their fellow human beings because they just don't care. So Amir al-Mu'mineen is saying to Malik, you make sure that these people are not around you, because at the end of the day, they will only care about themselves. They don't care about other people. And even when they make a mistake, when they have shortcomings, they will never admit it. And he says it is the common man who fights the enemy. When it is a matter of defending, for example, our land or fighting for our rights, those privileged few, they're not going to be there. They are not there to maintain any sorts of rights or any sorts of safety for their fellow human beings. They only care about themselves. Therefore, Amir al-Mu'mineen advises Malik not to have them around him. So he says to him, so live in close contact with the masses and be mindful of their welfare. So do not seclude yourself away from them and just care about the elite. Rather, no. Stay with the normal common people. Those are the ones that need your help. Those who are rich, those who are in power, they have everything they require. They can even buy things they can buy justice, they can buy freedom, they can buy whatever they want because they're rich. But the common people who are suffering, who have poverty, who are going through trouble, those are the ones who need help. So I says to Malik, make sure you associate yourself with them and stay with them. So when we look at human rights, when we look at the people in power, we can see there's a strong division. There's a big gap between the people and their superiors. This gap needs to be eliminated, where those who are in high powers, they need to come down and see what people are going through. Inshallah, we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. اللهم صل على محمد وآله
اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله اللهم صل على محمد وآله
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.